Clovers enchant those bags to help mask the iron as an extra precaution, I added. It was my very real intention that today would end without violence or bloodshed, but I've started to better appreciate the value in planning for contingencies. Another toss from Lillian, this time to Amy. She'd only been able to fit 4 daggers in her stomach, but that was enough to equip most of our clan. Arch and Charlotte were on the sidelines. As a half-fay, June couldn't touch iron. Bubba was an alchemically modified horse, and Albert already had the best weapon on the battlefield. That left only Crystal, Amy, Neil, and Lillian to arm. In the original plan, Arch had been expected to take a dagger while Neil relied on magic, but we'd been prepared to make changes on the fly to meet the needs of our challenge. Once the iron daggers entered my friend's hands, the tide of battle began to shift. No longer were the constructs hobbling back up and reforming after crippling blows. One stab from the iron daggers tore the enchanted life from their bodies, sending them tumbling to the ground in heaps of ice and branches. The surging forces that had been set on overwhelming their opponents were suddenly forced to fan out in temporary retreat. Spread across the battlefield, it was a fight. Clumped up on top of each other, it was a slaughter. Not bad. Deborah watched it all unfold with an analytical gaze, taking careful note of everything she saw. Not bad at all. Well, it's not on par with secretly smuggling a silver dagger in the same car as 2 other vampires, but I do like to try. From her side, Deborah lifted a dark sheath into my line of view. I couldn't quite tell what it was made of. The material seemed utterly foreign, though if I had to guess, it probably fit the blade currently jammed inside my back. Sheath made from dragon scales and enchanted by an archmage. Position and experience do have their perks. While my eyes might have widened a touch at the words dragon scales, the sheath itself was far from shocking. I'd always known she had access to more resources than most of us could ever dream of seeing, and this whole fight had illustrated the depth of her connections. Deborah had enough clout to have the Court of Frost help her test a single, lowly vampire. It was important to make myself remember that, even in complete victory, we would not defeat Deborah. We'd only pass her test. This wasn't her trying to kill us, and if I ever let time or pride cloud that fact, I would be putting my entire clan at risk. I'd learned a great deal from her, much more than I'd ever expected, but there was no lesson that landed harder than the one Lillian had tried to tell me weeks ago. The Blood Council was terrifying, and not to be trifled with. On the battlefield, my friends had broken into teams once more. Crystal and June were a terrifying duo, stabbing and slicing in a whirlwind of blades. Bubba was still stampeding, only now Amy was running behind him, finishing off the enemies he knocked down while Lillian guarded her rear. Albert and Neil were the ones who drew the most attention, however. Standing in the center of a crowd of constructs, Albert was swinging with all his might. At his side, Neil was doing his best with the dagger, but he couldn't hope to match Albert's power. I almost didn't see it, the glance Neil shot over to the sidelines, to where Arch was standing patiently. That was it, a single look, to which Arch replied with a stiff, visible nod of the head. Permission. He'd just gotten permission to do something. The question was what? I didn't have to wonder for very long. Neil reformed his magical barrier and dropped low, creating as small a target as possible. For an instant, I thought he was exhausted and trying to recover. Then I saw Albert begin to glow. At first, that was the only change, a sheen of light across Albert's skin. Seconds later, he struck another ice construct, only this time, he didn't merely slice it. Shards of ice sprayed across the plant monsters to its rear, the hit so hard it literally tore the living sculpture apart. That blow was much stronger than the ones that had come before, and Neil was only getting started. Every strike of the sword seemed to be stronger, and I soon realized that Albert was getting faster. His movements were so fast, in fact, so precise, that I was reasonably certain I couldn't have tracked them using human eyes. What had seemed like an army assaulting a single duo minutes prior now looked more akin to rats fighting a mountain. Not in terms of size, Albert hadn't magically shot up to 50 feet tall or anything, merely in terms of power. I knew he and Neil had been training with Arch. I was fully aware of how hard both of them had been working, and even with all of that, I'd still grossly underestimated how much they had grown. The sword had been right from the beginning. None of us saw it. None of us would have ever guessed it. And yet, as I watched Albert cleave easily through a pseudo-leg as thick as a real tree trunk, there was no denying the truth in what lay before us. The blade of the unlikely champion had unquestionably found the right person to wield it. "I miss this." Of all the commentary I'd expected from Deborah, that wasn't anything I'd imagined slipping past her lips. I wasn't even sure she knew she had said it out loud at first, until she continued. "Fighting for your people, shoulder to shoulder, willing to put everything on the line for one another, the terror of not knowing if you'll make it out alive, the rush of evenly matched combat, the unconquerable fear of the loss. I miss pushing your limits and seeing the rest of your clan break beyond theirs. Enjoy this time, Fred. The youth of a vampire is chaotic, dangerous, and often deadly, but it's usually the most exciting point of your life. When you get older, stronger, things slow down. Alliances and treaties mean battles have too many consequences, and the league you play in grows to accommodate far more deadly foes. If you're really that eager to relive the past, I believe our clan has a few more empty spots we can fill. Although I should warn you, as a rule, we're a little more restrained in our violence than today. I can't imagine that most of them would fight so hard if there was real life on the line." "I know. That's why they're constructs," Deborah said. "It must be possible for you to win, and after 6 weeks I've learned your attitude toward violence quite well. In truth, it was one of the largest points in your favor." From any other vampire, that sentiment might have surprised me. Deborah and I didn't see eye to eye on everything, especially not when dealing with potential threats, but I could respect the way she viewed the world. I hoped she could respect, or at least accept, the way we did things as well. Leaning down, Deborah grabbed the handle of the knife and jerked it out, putting it quickly back into its sheath. "I think you're smart enough to stay put without this, so there's no need to make you suffer. As for the offer, I'll have to pass. I had my youth, and it was glorious. Going backward would be pure indulgence, and I've got too much responsibility for that." She paused, looking down at my back more carefully. A sudden explosion drew both of our attentions away from Albert, who'd been hard to turn away from, and over to Amy. A huge circle of magical purple flames had appeared in her area of the battlefield, engulfing the constructs inside and turning them to water vapor and ash. Not content with just that, Amy pointed to another cluster of enemies. The purple fire struck out at them with what looked like a burning tentacle, setting all it touched ablaze. I knew that just because a mage specialized in one field, alchemy in Amy's case, didn't mean they couldn't learn other forms of magic, but this was beyond anything I'd ever expected. How had she pulled off a spell like that under these conditions? My eyes traveled to the ground where the circle of fire continued to burn, taking notice of the tracks winding their way around the purple inferno. Runes. What I'd mistaken for Bubba stampeding at random had in fact been him following specific, precise directions from Amy. He'd been etching runes into the dirt with his heavy hooves, building the spell slowly while storming through the enemies. It was the kind of technique that demanded incredibly high amounts of trust and communication, which made it the perfect tactic for the strange pair of friends who'd come up with it. I don't know what the standards for a clan are. I rose to my feet with care, making sure that Deborah didn't misinterpret my motions as me trying to defy her orders. I know that I, as an individual, am not as strong as you, or Quinn, or Petra, or Lillian, but we, as the House of Fred, are not weak, and I'm fairly certain most other vampire clans of our age and size would not be able to do what you're watching mine accomplish, not without taking substantial losses. There wasn't much left to watch. Despite the difference in numbers, iron and teamwork had made quite a difference, to say nothing of the spectacles Amy and Albert had put on. If the agents had been at full strength or capable of using the necessary weapons in June's case, I imagined it would have been an even shorter fight. In a way, I was glad Hellebore and Deborah had put those limits on us. It gave the rest of my friends a chance to show what they could really do when push came to shove. "There was never any question about the raw strength of your clan," Deborah told me. "You have a prodigy necromancer teamed with a zombie who wields a weapon of destiny, one of the most brilliant alchemists in the nation, a Therian willing to undergo magical augmentation, a sentient safe house unlike nearly any other, and you topped it off by poaching one of the House of Tervis' top fighters. That's not even including your allies, the King of the West, the head of the local Therians, two internationally renowned enchanters, and what appears to be three agents, one of whom is training actual members of your clan. To be frank, the raw power of your clan is one of the reasons we undertook this examination in the first place." That comment caught me by such surprise that words popped out of my mouth on instinct. "I thought the House of Terva made a complaint about us." "Of course they did. You beat them fairly, so they turned to playing politics in an effort to snatch victory from the ashes of defeat. Happens all the time, which is part of why we made it clear the Blood Council wasn't to be lightly drawn into such petty squabbles. But you and yours were a special case. What you see as a group of friends could be interpreted by others as the beginning of a revolution. A multi-parahuman clan is dangerous. Under the right leadership, with enough time and the right recruits, they could challenge existing power structures. Think about how you'd fight a gang of Therians versus vampires or mages. If we had to fight your clan or a stronger version of it, then the matter gets immensely more complicated. You represent a potential threat, and the Blood Council makes a habit of being on top of such things long before they turn into problems. It seemed a bit of a stretch to imply that my clan could ever contend with an organization comprised of members as strong as Deborah, but when viewed with a long-term mindset, I had to admit it made a modicum of sense. Parahumans either died or aged, and most of the ones I knew would only get stronger the longer they were around. Nervous now, I glanced at her profile, checking for any telltale signs of attack. "I hope that, with all you've seen, you realize now that my clan, my friends, have no real interest in going down that route. All we want, all we've ever wanted, is to go about our lives in peace." "Relax, Fred." A hand patted me lightly on the back, near the place where the wound from the dagger had been. "It's done. You showed forethought with the daggers, cunning in keeping me out of the loop, and leadership in the way you gave your friends direction while being wounded and stuck outside the battle. Yes, physically, you're weak, but we could change that just by feeding you the right type of blood. Knowing how to think, how to lead, those are far more important factors to me. Anyway, at this point, I couldn't kill you, even if I wanted to. I knew, just from the tone, even before her hand hit my back again, right on the place I'd gotten stabbed, and with much harder force, enough to send me stumbling a step forward. After all, as a member of the Blood Council, it would be ridiculous of me to kill off what appears to be the first vampire in known history who's immune to silver. 6. That was the sort of comment that very much demanded some follow-up discussion. Unfortunately, we didn't have a chance to keep talking, as in the stands, Hellebore clapped her hands together once. Just that one gesture, and suddenly, the battle was over. The three remaining constructs collapsed, Amy's fire burned out, Neil's barrier vanished, and Albert stopped glowing. Even Bubba seemed to be turning back into a regular horse, and then, moments later, into a human once more. Somehow, Hellebore had swept all magic from the arena with virtually no effort at all. I could see why Crystal had opted to play ball with the Fae rather than stick to her usual tactics of aggression and cursing. Against that kind of power, even she had to be careful.
"The trial is finished. Agent Jenkins, while I do not condone bringing iron into our lands, I also did not expressly forbid its use. Therefore, you have won the battle without violating any of my conditions. As a representative of the Court of Frost, I hereby release you from your contract of betrothal. You are free to marry as you wish."
Crystal was battered, tired, and had blood dripping from a wound on her temple, yet she still let out a whoop of pure joy at the news. When her yell had faded, she looked up at Hellebore and bowed, albeit slightly.
"I accept the judgment of the Court of Frost, and thank you for your time."
"Oh no, Agent Jenkins, it is the Court of Frost who thanks you."
Despite her construct army getting creamed, Hellebore didn't appear to be bothered at all. If anything, she looked like a cat who'd stolen a songbird from its cage.
"While having an agent in our hand was useful, favors owed by the Blood Council are worth far more to us. On that note, Prudence, I trust that you will honor your debts."
It was Deborah's turn to bow, and there was nothing slight about hers.
"No titles, please. I am here today as a bodyguard and nothing more. But you can rest assured, the markers I offered came with the full consent of the Blood Council, and will be repaid properly when presented."
Now that I had the whole picture, my respect for Hellebore only increased. She'd set things up so that even if she lost her leverage over an agent, the Fae would gain favors from the Blood Council. No matter how this day went down, whether we won or lost, Hellebore had come out ahead. That was politics and scheming at its finest. I could see why so many people feared the Fae.
"Very well, then. The trial has been concluded, and debts have been pledged or settled. The Court of Frost hereby releases you all back into the lands of humanity. Take that detestable metal with you. I will be quite cross if so much as even a scrap remains upon your departure."
Hellebore gave one final glance to Deborah, then vanished in a flurry of snowflakes. At first, we all stood frozen, waiting for some other threat or danger to rear its ugly head. Slowly, the truth settled in. It was over, and we'd come out intact. We started moving, and just like that, we became a crush of bodies all meeting at once. Hugs and cheers abounded as relief washed over us. Only Deborah, Arch, and June stayed out of the fray, the first two out of choice, June because she couldn't get that close to our iron daggers. In the middle of it all, I found my way to Crystal. She picked up right where she'd left off upon arrival, planting a kiss on me that threatened to knock me from my feet. Happy as we all were, we didn't celebrate for long. This was a foreign realm with unknown dangers and magic. The sooner we crossed back over, the better. Within a few minutes of Hellebore's disappearance, we were back on the trail, heading toward the exit. By coincidence or design, I've never figured out which, Deborah ended up far away from me. She was still guarding the rear, but Crystal pulled me to the front, filling me in on some of her adventures in the 6 weeks she'd been away. Her journey was an incredible one, and I could scarcely fathom the kind of perils she'd overcome. It made for a wonderful distraction as well, keeping me from brooding too much about what might come next for me. How Deborah knew was irrelevant. She did, and it would be easy enough to prove even if I could sow seeds of doubt, which felt like something of a long shot. After all, wounds from silver weapons healed far more slowly on most parahumans, and then I realized that was the moment that had given me away. When she pulled the dagger out, my body did what it always does in such situations. It healed. As an experienced vampire, she would have absolutely known that my wound shouldn't close that fast. Between seeing the injury heal and knowing about my contest of holding silver knives with Petra, it would have been easy to put the pieces together. The real question was what she planned to do with that information. Probably not death, not at first, especially if she planned to study me. Unfortunately, vampires could endure quite a bit before dying. She might even be able to halfway manage a dissection or its magical equivalent without crossing the line into permanent death. Taking a glance over my shoulder, I found Deborah's eyes watching, waiting. She knew I was worried, and while there was nothing angry or aggressive in her expression, that wasn't as reassuring as it should have been. Deborah was practical, not cruel. Even if she took no joy in carving me up or handing me over to the Blood Council, it didn't mean she'd hesitate to do either if she deemed it the right choice for the greater good. However, that same practicality was also my largest ray of hope, strangely enough. If it wasn't efficient, if there wasn't a point to cutting me open, then she wouldn't waste time in trying. The fact that she hadn't struck yet was also encouraging, although I had to entertain the possibility that she was merely waiting until we'd left the Fey Lands. There was nothing for me to do, though. My secret was out, and the ball was firmly in Deborah's court. Since I had no control over the situation, I resolved to simply enjoy whatever time I had left. Taking Crystal's hand in mine as she continued to tell me about tracking a winter wolf across a tundra, I tried to savor the moment. Most of the people I cared about were here, safe and happy. Should the worst come to pass, my bargain with Deborah would still be in effect. The others could continue on like this, sad for a while, perhaps, but they'd all have long lives ahead of them. Lives that would keep going, and be filled with new challenges, surprises, and joys, whether I was there or not. Surprisingly, that thought turned out to be a larger comfort than I'd expected. Getting back to the door that took us home seemed to be a faster journey than walking to the arena had been. I don't mean that in a "we were all happy so time flew by" context either. Quite literally, there was less ground to cover, as though the trail had shrunken while we were fighting. My body tensed as we reached the exit, which, from this side, looked like a metal door someone had haphazardly jammed into a forest for no reason. This close to getting out, I found myself waiting for the other shoe to drop, for one final Fey assault to overtake us. None came, and Arch yanked the door open without issue. Together, we all walked back out of the concrete bunker and into the late evening of our own world. Stepping across a magical border into part of another realm had certainly made for an interesting experience, but I didn't think I'd ever been happier to set foot on Colorado soil. I hate to impose, I really do, but would it be possible for Fred and me to take one of the cars back alone? Deborah's voice was calm, pleasant even, yet I grew still at the sound of it. She wanted to get me away from the others for this next part. That didn't mean for sure that I was about to die, but it certainly wasn't a vote of confidence.
I just spent 6 weeks camping out in the fucking Fey Lands. If you think I'm not spending the ride catching up with my man, then you've obviously forgotten everything about being human, Crystal snapped. Also, hello, and who the fuck are you?
Deborah's here representing the Blood Council. She's been conducting an assessment on Fred since you left. Since the day you left, in fact. Arch had taken the chance to light up one of his endless supply of cigarettes before we got into the cars, almost like he'd known there would be a discussion before departure. If you were too distracted to catch it when Hellebore addressed her, Deborah is serving as prudence.
Oh, well, in that case, sure, I'll happily let a member of the Blood Council drive off with Freddy in her clutches. Yeah, no, that's not happening. And remember, I'm not under Fey rules to hold back anymore.
Crystal's hand dropped a little lower, that much closer to her gun. In response, Deborah raised her arms, reminding us that she was technically unarmed. Relax, Agent Jenkins. This is simply a good chance for Fred and me to have our final discussion regarding his assessment and put the whole ugly matter to bed. The sooner the assessment is done, the sooner I leave. And isn't that ultimately what we all want? I will even offer a guarantee of safety. Fred shall be delivered to Charlotte Manor completely unharmed and before sunrise. I swear it on behalf of the Blood Council. It was a good offer, but Crystal didn't so much as bat an eye.
Look, asshole, you don't know me, but I'm not one to repeat myself, so step away.
Crystal, it's fine. I'll go. Interrupting someone was, of course, quite rude, but I couldn't risk letting this spin out of hand. Deborah has been acting as my bodyguard this whole time, and I've come through it safely. One last car ride isn't going to hurt, and if it means wrapping all of this Blood Council business up, then I'm for it. We'll be perfectly fine. I genuinely had no idea if that was true. Deborah would probably keep her word, since she'd sworn on the Blood Council, but that didn't stop her from snatching me up the next time I stepped outside. The only thing I knew without question was that if this was going to get violent, I didn't want any of the others getting dragged in. Better to take the ride and put myself at risk than take the chance of Deborah deciding to bring me in by force. If she did, the others would fight, and even if they somehow won, there would be casualties. That possibility was unacceptable. I was the head of this clan. I was the one who should be put at risk.
Let them go, Crystal. She ran everything through the proper channels. She's got the right to do this, and she's smart. Deborah knows the kinds of enemies she'd make by going rogue on this, especially now that she's sworn on her office.
Arch stubbed out his cigarette in the box he always kept for ashes, then pulled out a set of keys.
Going to be snug for the rest of us, so everyone get ready to squeeze in tight. Albert, you and that sword are riding in the back.
Slowly, warily, the rest of my friends piled into the first SUV. Crystal was the last to go, giving me a long kiss, followed by staring Deborah down for several seconds.
I've been doing nothing but hunting and fighting for over a month. Don't think I won't happily keep it going for a few more days. Freddy, be safe, and get home soon.
One last kiss, this time to the cheek, and then Crystal finally got into the vehicle. Doors slammed, an engine revved, and the SUV drove off down the same dirt road we'd arrived on. With everyone gone, Deborah and I climbed into the front of our vehicle. Neither of us said anything until the seatbelts were clicked into place and the engine was running. So, what comes now?
Now, we start at the beginning, Deborah replied. When did you first discover you were immune to silver?
I could have lied, pretended I was like this since I'd been turned into a vampire, but I really didn't see the point. If nothing else, letting her in on the truth would show her how impossible a task it was to recreate the situation. How many dragons of Gideon's power ended up captured? And how often would a vampire be in a position to help free them? Whether the truth would make me more valuable alive or not was impossible to predict. But at this point, honesty was all I had left. I didn't start out immune to silver. In the beginning, it hurt me the same as any other vampire. Something happened to change that, though. Something involving the King of the West. It was one of the few times I'd seen a flash of surprise on Deborah's face. She put the SUV in drive and stepped on the gas, sending us in the same direction as the other vehicle.
Sounds like you've got quite a story there, which works nicely, since we're looking at a long drive. Take your time and tell me everything.
7. It might have been the first time I'd seen Deborah truly stunned, let alone shocked into silence. The only sound after I finished explaining my incident with Gideon was the occasional squeal of tires or click of the turn signal. I didn't try to push the issue. As long as she wasn't directly threatening or killing me, I was happy to let her take all the processing time she needed.
If this were coming to me from anyone else, vampire or parahuman, I wouldn't believe it. You helped to free a dragon, the King of the West, and in the process, he used you as a conduit for his will and power, the result of which is that you're somehow immune to silver. That's crazy, Fred. Pure, unrestrained crazy. Yet, somehow, I think you're telling the truth. Partially because you're not a particularly adept liar, but mostly because I've witnessed the evidence with my own eyes. Insane as that story is, it's matched by the proof I've seen. That a vampire can just shrug off one of the most ubiquitous parahuman weaknesses in existence. It is just the silver, right?
So far as I know, yes. Sunlight still stings, garlic gives me the usual reaction, and fire makes me skittish. I haven't tried setting myself alight, staking, or decapitation yet, but I've got no reason to think they'll be any different. I can be hurt. I've been injured several times since the incident. Pausing, I debated over how far to take this. Deborah knew my main secret, and that was bad enough. There was more, though. The only question was whether or not I wanted to go all in with my confession to a member of the Blood Council. Deborah might be my best shot at an ally in this, but that would be less likely if she found out that I was still hiding things from her. Ultimately, it came down to answers. I wanted some. I wanted to know what had happened to me. I wanted to know what else might be on the horizon. No one knew at the moment, true, but the resources and knowledge of the Blood Council made finding those answers a lot more viable. I couldn't do this alone. I'd learned that lesson over and over since the moment I'd been turned into a vampire. Pragmatic to the point of ruthlessness though she was, Deborah wasn't cruel. She didn't kill without purpose, so I had to hope that I was worth more to her undead than fully dead.
There is one more thing. I'm sure you're aware of my sire Quinn and his attack on an agency base last year. During that time, he was using some collar that amplified his natural control as a sire to command a squad of innocent people that he'd turned. It didn't work on me.
Well, your sire is an unmitigated bastard, so I can't say I'm too choked up over that part, Deborah replied. Although, it does make a certain amount of sense. That was the first time anyone had used the word sense about my condition, so naturally I was intrigued. How so? She took her time responding, changing lanes a few times to get past a small block of traffic that was slowing things down. Every move was fluid and perfect. Deborah knew where she would end up before she ever touched the turn signal. Things like this, like me, events that could catch her off guard, must have been rarer and rarer as the centuries wore on. A vampire is a dead body animated by magic. Yes, we keep our minds or souls or whatever it is that can linger on in ghost form after a body dies, but at our core, that's what we are. Corpses held aloft by strings of magic. Legends say that the first vampire was the one who found the magic, who gifted it to those he felt deserved eternal life, and we've been passing it along ever since. We are part magic, part flesh. The flesh can be changed. Use the right weapon, and you can leave a wound that not even we can heal from. Like Quinn's arm, I said. Precisely. So if the flesh part of our equation can be changed under the right circumstances, then it isn't reaching to consider the idea that our magical aspect can be influenced as well. It's never happened before, but we've also never had a vampire wander into a situation where a dragon needed to flood them with power. The magic of a dragon is already unpredictable. What you channeled must have left a mark of some kind behind that slightly changed the foundation of whatever it is that lets you continue living, even though you've died. I stifled a sigh, albeit poorly, so badly, in fact, that Deborah took notice. Something wrong with my theory? Not at all. It's the same one Arch and Crystal came up with after we discovered my change. My apologies. I didn't mean to be rude. I suppose I was just hoping that you might have more insight or answers. That's an unreasonable expectation, though. This is as new to you as it was to us. We exited the highway, heading toward Charlotte Manor, and I noticed that Deborah was slowing down. It wouldn't have stood out if not for her normally aggressive driving style. She wanted to keep talking. This discussion wasn't over yet. Trust me, we both want answers. And the Blood Council will too. What you have is not exactly a game-changer. There are plenty of non-silver weaknesses out there for us. But it is something a lot of vampires would do deadly, dangerous things to have. The good news for you is that until we fully understand your condition and whether or not it can be replicated, the Blood Council isn't going to even entertain the idea of killing you, especially since you already passed your assessment. The bad news is that they'll want to study you. Since you're marrying an agent and officially aligned with the agency as well as the King of the West, I don't think they'll have the clout to force you into captivity, but there's no way we'll just let this go. It's a free country, and Winslow already has another vampire clan living here. Let them move out here if they like. I do my business in the open. They're welcome to watch all they want. I made a conscious effort to sound calmer than I felt. This wasn't the time to let on just how nervous the idea of even more vampires in my town made me. At least the House of Turva felt the need to play nice due to all the other parahumans around. Would the Blood Council have such compunctions? Deborah shook her head. Not the kind of study I mean. But as prudence, it is my evaluation that taking you into captivity by force represents more danger than is wise. What you have, what you are, is fundamentally connected to the power of a dragon. That means the King of the West has a stake in this, and moving against his pawns often comes with a heavy toll. I think establishing a more cooperative relationship with a willing participant would make things easier on all of us. You get to keep living your life, and we don't have to sacrifice thousands to Gideon's wrath just to put you in a cage. If you're more worried about Gideon than Crystal in that situation, then you need to spend more time with my fiancée. It really wasn't the time for jokes, but sometimes you get through a situation using any tool that carries you forward. I get your meaning, though. Either I play nice and we all get along, or I push the matter and throw us all into a world of trouble. Maybe it's worth the losses to you to take me in. Maybe it isn't. But either way, people will probably end up hurt, or worse, in the conflict. That about sum it up? Nicely so. Instead of turning down the road toward Charlotte Manor, Deborah took a slight detour, putting us in the parking lot of an old grocery store that had shut down. She didn't kill the engine, though she did shift it into park. I'll do my best to shoot straight with you on this. Granted, I don't have many answers to offer at the moment, not until I talk with the others, but I can still try to put your fears at ease. I'll recommend that we do this peacefully, and the others will listen. What shape that cooperative effort takes is something we'll have to figure out in time. As long as we're on the same page, we can do this in a way that keeps everyone happy and doesn't trigger a small war. Any questions on what little we've got so far? I actually did have a question, one that had been bouncing around in my mind for a while. It wasn't exactly on topic, but I wasn't one to pass up an open opportunity for knowledge. What is the Prudence? Sebastian mentioned it, Hellebore called you that, and you just used the word yourself. It's a title, I take it. I'm just not sure of the context. That drew a half-chuckle from Deborah, and her gaze momentarily softened. You can be an odd one sometimes, Fred. That's not the question most people would ask in this situation. Still, I made the offer, so I suppose you deserve a response. Those on the Blood Council have roles they serve and titles to go with them. The exact wording has changed with time and language, yet the purposes of our roles have never shifted. I am the current Prudence, the member tasked with caution, planning, forethought, all the sorts of things you'd probably expect given our time together. She raised her right hand, slowly closed it into a fist, and then began to raise her fingers one by one. Prudence, wrath, pride, wisdom. There was a pause, slight but unmistakable, between those four and the final finger. Control. Those are the five aspects of the Blood Council. Wrath is our version of a general. He oversees combat-related issues and drops the hammer when it is deemed to need dropping. Pride handles our alliances, diplomacy, image management, anything related to ensuring vampires are properly feared and respected. Wisdom is our researcher, both in terms of ancient lore and modern secrets. And yes, upon leaving you, he's the first one I'll be calling. Control coordinates the other four, resolving disputes and leading the Blood Council overall. We all have a say in things, but Control is the one who breaks the ties. Those are the roles we all serve, and many of us have held them for a very long time. Worrying though it was to discover there was someone higher up the ladder that Deborah would have to deal with, I was also intrigued to discover more about our ruling body. Besides, I'd learned to trust that Deborah wasn't one to promise anything she couldn't deliver on. If she felt she could smooth things over, then I would trust her. One more question, I said. What comes next? In a general sense, I take you home. You reunite with that woman who was so happy to see you. You find a new bodyguard since my assignment is over. The Terva clan shouldn't be a major concern going forward. There was merit to the question of whether you were fit to lead, so I won't wipe them out. But they'll still get some pain and a firm warning to steer clear of your clan. Have to make sure my fearsome reputation stays intact. As for future dealings with the Blood Council, being ageless means we're not prone to jumping into things without giving all the angles proper consideration.
Soon you'll hear from us. Just do your best to keep out of trouble until then. That's what comes next in the long term, mind you. In the short term, we have a matter to settle before I take you home." Digging into a pocket on her side, Deborah rummaged around before pulling out an empty bottle. Twisting off the top, she jiggled the glass container while meeting my eyes with a serious stare. "I'm going to need some blood." The possibility had occurred to me, and at least she was asking, in a way. Vampires had blood, it made sense, since we were always drinking the stuff, though we didn't have as much as humans. When wounded, my blood had always seemed thicker than the normal version, as though it was heading toward congealment, but hadn't quite made it yet. It meant we didn't bleed much, even when injured, which was normally a good thing. Tonight, on the other hand, it was probably going to make this process much harder than it otherwise would have been. Slowly, I sank my fangs into my left forearm, creating a pair of holes inches below the wrist. Holding it over the jar, I watched as droplets of blood began to fall. I'd discovered last year, when I chomped into Quinn's ankle, that the fangs of a vampire made potent weapons even against our own kind, so it didn't surprise me when the holes I'd made healed more slowly than they would have otherwise. Even with that, it took two more bites before we got the jar to halfway full. I started to pull my hand away, but Deborah reached out and grabbed it. "One moment. This is the first question I'm going to get upon returning, so we may as well knock it out now." She leaned in and licked the remaining blood from my forearm just as the wounds fully closed. I could see the darker red on her tongue as her mouth closed, followed by her eyes moments later. "Tastes like normal vampire blood, which is to say terrible. Never drink from another vampire if you can help it. While what we've got is still considered blood, most of the nutrients are already gone since our bodies absorb them. You can sometimes get a residual boost off whatever parahuman they last fed from, but it's rarely worth the risk. This time it's unavoidable, since I have to test the obvious." Before I could properly wonder what the obvious was, Deborah had pulled out her silver knife. Carefully, she carved a slice across the back of her left arm, crimson blood oozing out slowly across the dark canvas of her skin. "Nope, that still hurts like hell. I didn't think it would be that easy, but I still had to check. We might still get answers from your blood, though. In the hands of our experts, I'm sure there's plenty more to be unlocked. Don't be surprised if we come calling for more down the line. So long as I have time to regenerate it, I don't mind." Deborah shifted the SUV back into drive and took us out of the parking lot. True to her word, she was dropping me off at Charlotte Manor, as promised. We arrived to find most of my friends out on the porch watching for my arrival. I could see that Crystal hadn't even bothered to shower, despite the weeks of wilderness that still clung to her skin. We made eye contact through the windshield, and I noticed her hand never strayed too far from her gun. "You're right about them," Deborah told me. "They are indeed lunatics, but they're loyal lunatics. They love one another and they love you. I've seen many, many clans in my time, and you can't imagine how rare it is for ones like this to come along. Units founded on trust and support rather than fear and control. I'm glad I didn't have to disband it." "Thank you for that, by the way. Not sure I ever properly expressed my gratitude in the chaos of that fight." "No thanks needed, and I mean that. I didn't do anything. You, your clan, you all passed on your own merit." Deborah reached over and popped my door open. "Time to go back where you belong, and I'll do the same. Tell the others I'll send for my van and things. I think tonight is best left to you and yours. It's been an interesting 6 weeks, Fred.
Thanks for keeping me entertained.
I took the hint and slid out of the SUV, shutting the door behind me. Deborah didn't say any goodbyes. She just waved to everyone, then pulled out of the parking lot and headed back down the road. Her departure was as sudden as her arrival, and while I wasn't quite sad to see her go, it did feel a tad strange. I didn't linger on the sentiment for long, though. I had a whole clan waiting to hear the news of where we stood, and a fiancé I was eager to spend more time with. And then, once the celebrations waned, I was going to have to bring Arch and Crystal up to speed on our new situation. Somehow, I didn't think they'd take the Blood Council being in on my secret nearly as well as I had.
8. Of course she knows. As soon as she stabbed you with the silver blade, I took it as a given that she would piece the truth together. I told the others to expect as much during our ride home.
In retrospect, it really was my own fault for expecting Arch to be surprised. The man was an experienced, intelligent agent who'd had a perfect view of everything that happened from the sidelines. He was relatively calm about the development, which made an interesting counter to Crystal as she paced up and down Charlotte's dining room. As it turned out, we were having this meeting first and celebrating after. Work before play was the agent mindset at every turn, and it was one I generally agreed with, although a night off after what we'd been through might have been enjoyable.
At least the Prudence is the one who found out. She'll be smart about the pitch, probably even stick to her word. Arch and I will lay some groundwork, too, just in case they try to come at us sideways. We'll loop Gideon and Richard into the discussion to put some weight on it. Your secret might be out, but they aren't going to come steal you away in the middle of the night. Not unless they want to see why Hellebore made a point of holding me back during that fight.
Crystal didn't miss a step as she ranted, her gait graceful and precise as she stalked up and down the wooden floor. Finally, I rose from my chair and met her just before she was about to turn once more. It was a collision that turned into an embrace as we wrapped our arms around one another.
I'll be okay. Deborah could have taken me tonight if she'd wanted to go that route, but it would cause them far too much trouble in the long run. As long as I stay cooperative, they have no need to push things. They get a subject to study, I get to keep living my life. That's more or less the arrangement, and it works for all the parties involved.
For now, until they can't replicate your condition and it becomes a matter of having the silver immune vampire under their thumb, a tool to deploy whenever the need arises. She pressed her head against my chest, clutching me tighter.
I won't let them have you, Freddy. I'll keep you safe. Burying both my parents was enough. I'm not putting my husband in the ground, too.
No, you aren't. But first, you need to actually get married. So you should probably focus on that.
Arch rose from the table, pack of cigarettes already in hand.
I'll handle the Blood Council. The upside to being old is that I've got a lot of people who owe me favors. We'll get things hammered out and make sure Fred has ample protection. You two have enough on your plate.
He didn't even say goodbye before he left the room, heading off to the smoking lounge Charlotte had built within her walls especially for Arch's habit. As he left, I heard a gentle sigh from Crystal.
Much as that man hates to show it, he's kind of a softy, especially when love is involved.
Part of me wanted to ask if we were talking about the same person, but it would have been rude after Arch had offered to personally handle the negotiations for my safety. Instead, I decided to try to probe for more information by picking at the obvious oddity in her statement.
Why is he a softy for love? History. Or practice, maybe. It's not my place to tell you Arch's story, so you can either trust me or ask him.
I think I'll just trust you. Shifting our embrace, her face found mine, and we kissed once more. Perhaps it seems excessive, but after a 6-week absence, an abundance of affection was certainly well-deserved. When we finally parted, my worries about Deborah and the Blood Council felt miles further off than they had an hour ago. You know, Arch does have a point. Now that you're home and that business with your old engagement is done, we should probably start planning the wedding. Crystal pulled back from me, an expression of incredulity on her face.
Start? Freddy, we are way past starting to plan for a wedding. I've already got a few venues in mind, some vendors on my short list, and a big chunk of the decorations picked out.
The look of surprise on my face gave me away before a word could pass my lips, earning me a knowing glare from Crystal.
Oh, what? Just because I shoot bad guys and kick a lot of ass, I can't be excited about my wedding?
Less that, more the fact that you aren't generally what I would consider to be a planner.
I think you might be surprised to see how I function when on the job, but from a personal life standpoint, I can see where you're coming from. Besides, this is important to me, so I want it to be special. And I am very thankful that I'm marrying the kind of man who I know will be supportive and helpful with the process.
Crystal's stare had softened as the mischievous smile I'd fallen so helplessly in love with curved across her face.
That's a not-so-subtle hint that you'll be pitching in on all of this, too. Later, I mean. Tonight, we've earned a break and a little revelry with our friends. Tomorrow, we'll start on the wedding plans.
We kissed again, shorter this time, and it was my turn to smile when we parted.
That sounds lovely, and of course I'll be there every step of the way. I love you, and I can scarcely wait to declare that in front of our friends and family.
See, people keep thinking you get yourself needlessly into danger, but that answer right there proves how good your survival instincts are, Crystal pointed out. I'm holding you to that, so be sure you block some time out of that busy schedule of yours. I'll try to keep our trips limited, but we'll have to plan on at least 2 runs to Borback, one to scout and one for the event, and that assumes that everything goes perfectly.
We should plan for some redundant... I'm sorry, Borback? As in, that town we visited in Texas a few years ago?
Yeah. Freddy, I'm an agent. Most of the people I know are parahumans, and getting that many of them together in one place is much safer if we do it in a town where they don't have to hide. Then, when you consider dietary and environmental requirements for the various types of parahumans, and the fact that you'll need a very specialized set of vendors, let's just say that Borback is one of 3 open settlements, and it's a place where I've got connections and history. Of course, that's where we're getting married, unless you've got a solid reason why we shouldn't.
Her points made sense, and while I did love our town, the idea of gathering a whole crowd of parahumans in it made me skittish. Borback was probably a better choice, for the mundane civilians of Winslow as much as the parahumans who would be attending.
The location is a logical choice, so I see your point there, but exactly how many people do we plan on attending?
Well, weddings are big social spectacles and are generally viewed as important communal gatherings. In the parahuman culture, not inviting someone you know to that sort of event can be seen as disrespectful, especially for an authority figure like me. So that means that between my co-workers, friends, frenemies, probably like 3 actual enemies, let's just say we'll be looking at the larger venues Borback has to offer.
I shook my head, even as I had to fight back the urge to chuckle at myself for expecting anything different.
This isn't going to be easy, is it?
Obviously not. When is anything ever easy for us?
We'll just have to make sure we get a marriage that's worth all the trouble. Of all the many, many things I live in constant fear of, that concern has never once entered my mind. My response drew a rare blush from Crystal, and I savored the spectacle like catching sight of an eclipse. The sound of yelling broke our spell as happy cheers spilled from the parlor where the others were no doubt toasting to victory, not yet aware of the new potential dangers we faced. Together, Crystal and I walked hand in hand out of the dining room to join our friends. There was still so much to do on so many fronts, but moments like these were what made the effort worthwhile. If I had learned nothing else from Deborah, she had taught me the importance of enjoying my life as it was while I could. Time was the one enemy none of us could defeat, and sooner or later, it would march on. I had to hang on to these moments, experience them fully, because one day they would be nothing more than memories. And if that was the case, then I might as well make them good ones. This concludes Deadly Assessments by Drew Hayes. Narrated by Kirby Hayborn. Copyright 2018 by Andrew Hayes. This unabridged audiobook is published by arrangement with Drew Hayes and was produced in the year 2018 by Tantor Media Incorporated, a division of Recorded Books, which holds the copyright thereto. Please visit Tantor.com for more information on our growing library of unabridged audiobooks.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.